Question.
Yeah.
You don't have a man, that's what you know.
Why don't we start right off? Roll them. Everybody up to speed.
Lift on.
That sounds like a damn set.
Well, this, I guess, will be one of the more casual press conferences we've had around this area. But to start off as casual as we can, we have a Saturday afternoon ahead of us together. Not much has changed since we initially looked at the GTA 6 mission, other than the fact that we are trained to the point where we're aware of what the mission really represents. The rendezvous that is scheduled for this mission, of course, consists of the Gina launched on the Atlas, the Pad 14, and the Gemini spacecraft 6 launched on a Titan 2 from Pad 19. If the Gina goes into a good orbit, one that we can handle with both Gina fuel and Gemini propulsion fuel, we will launch the Gemini one orbit behind the Gina. From that point, the Gemini fighters, as others have been, we are placed into orbit, although this orbit will be described as a 87-146 nautical mile orbit, meaning 87 perigee and 146 apogee. From that point on, the ground range or the mission control center will be plotting our trajectory and the Gina trajectory to modify our orbit from a relatively fast catch-up rate in that we are initially elliptic to ultimately a circular orbit, which will have an orbit of 146 miles as apogee and perigee. The burn that is made to put us into circular orbit is called the NSR burn, or normal slow rate, meaning that we are behind the Gina, 15 miles lower than it, catching up only by the fact that the circular orbit being lower has a higher velocity. At a certain point, after we initiate this burn that puts us in this circular orbit, we are in the rendezvous mode, and at that point, from nominal time, it's approximately 60 to 65 minutes, we make the transfer burn. This timing is very critical and is determined by three ways in order of best accuracy. The first way to time when we make the transfer burn is by the angular measurement, measured between the Gina and the spacecraft. The next technique, in case we lose parts of our total system, is to use range, and the third is time. Time from the circularization burn. That is a burn that represents normally about 32 feet per second. This starts us then on a transfer similar to a Holman transfer. It's about as close as we can get to a Holman within the efficiency of the total system. A Holman is the purest, cheapest transfer you can make. We will end up finally coming up below the Gina and ahead of it, much like the maneuver that we describe in aviation as an immelman. We'll have our heads down and we'll be just about approaching the top of the loop, still slightly pitched up. At that point, approximately 3,000 feet out from the Gina, we will effect what is called a braking maneuver, retarding our closing velocity from approximately 40 to 45 feet per second down to about 5 feet per second. This braking maneuver takes about, well, our range decreases from approximately 3,000 feet when we initiate it to approximately 1,800 to 2,000 feet, the time required to make the burn. From then on, we are tracking line of sight on the Gina and slowly come into position, ideally about 50 to 60 feet from the Gina. Then we are continually slowing down obviously not by much, 5 feet per second is actually a speedy course. Slow down to about a half a foot per second, you dock. This terminal phase, as I described it from braking, will be conducted during the daylight phase of one of the orbits. After docking, we will have had a good check on the Agena, both by the display panel on the Agena target docking adapter, and of course from further information from the ground through its telemetry to the ground station. We will then rigidize. This is done automatically by the function of making up three latches on the target docking adapter. Then we will be one spacecraft, Agena and Gemini. At this point, we will run various engineering tests to compare the two vehicles. As you can imagine, there are two stabilization platforms to see how closely they correspond. Make attitude changes while docked with the Agena, both with the Agena making the maneuver and with the spacecraft making the maneuver. There are some experiments that we will perform after leaving the Agena. One of them is a DOD experiment called D2. This will require backing away from the Agena. We will back away approximately 60 feet, and we will fly basically a circle around the Agena with a radius of about 60 to 100 feet, taking stills and movies of the Agena through the very background as we go up over the Agena, pitching over and coming down, doing a loop in essence around the Agena in plane, always pointing our nose at the Agena. After this particular maneuver, we will have another day dock, and Tom Stafford in the right seat will affect the second day dock. After that, we will have two more separations in the night side and do a night dock from each seat. We have an attitude control stick, of course, in the center, which either man can use, and a maneuver controller on either outboard side of the spacecraft for respectively the right and left seats. That, in essence, is the mission. We will ultimately back away from the Agena, and at a known velocity, we'll be tracking the Agena with a sextant to measure angles between known stars and the Agena. This is to get some data for the Apollo technique for rendezvous using an optical star tracking system. The sextant would be considered in that category as a backup device. This is to determine our capability to measure these angles as compared to other experiments, particularly one on GT4, where the same angular technique has been applied, measuring the angle between two known stars and a known star on the horizon. Offhand, I can't think of any other major things that we haven't discussed as thoroughly as we have in the past. If there are any questions, I think that might be appropriate, or maybe some of the other folks might have something they want to say. Yes?
I think you've covered it pretty well.
There's not much to add to the basic mission, except for Waller's already covered.
What can I say? Gemini and with the Agena. Does that tell me they're going to light up the Agena engine?
At this point in time, there are no plans to light either the SPS, which is the secondary propulsion system, or the primary propulsion system. What I was referring to is the fact that we have an attitude control system on the Agena, which can maneuver the Agena in attitude to any cardinal point. For example, we would use the Agena to yaw the complete spacecraft, meaning Agena and Gemini, when docked 90 degrees. And we would use the spacecraft to yaw the total system back 90 degrees to check the motions of both vehicles were docked and rigid on, of course.
You said at this time. Do you have the capability for burning that engine?
We do, yes. Both the all propulsion systems.
Wally?
Yes,
sir. According to the information that we've picked up around here, there are two SPS burns under consideration. One of them would drop the whole outfit from your insertion orbit or your final docking orbit to a 146-161, and a second burn dropping it to a 146 circular. Have these been thrown out completely, or are they still being considered?
None of these things have been completely finalized at this point. Those are valid concepts that have been looked at very carefully and then integrated into proposed flight plans. Such things as a re-rendezvous have been considered, and none of these at this point in time have been finalized as the mission flight plan for this particular mission.
You're getting to the final, or to liftoff at this point. How soon can we expect the final flight plan?
I'd like to have that answer myself. No, it doesn't. These particular maneuvers do not affect our state of training. They merely add to the total package of the mission. Our training must be focused naturally on the ascent mode to get into orbit. For example, this morning I was working in the launch abort trainer that we have here. And all this past week, the four of us have been in St. Louis doing rendezvous in every mode that we can conceivably expect to see happen. We, at this point in time, have that nailed. The D2 experiment I described, where it's a precise tracking exercise, we just did yesterday in St. Louis. So these things are done. Now, if we add a burn to the mission, all it really means is it's another burn. It's not a classical training maneuver. Most of the burns basically affect the readiness and overall training of the ground network rather than the flight crew.
Does the spacecraft have the capability of making these orbital changes, or would that require the SPS?
No, we can make quite a large orbital change with the onboard system. This, naturally, we start out with an 87-146 and end up with a 160-161, which the spacecraft is doing on its own. So in turn, we can obviously bring it back down to the equivalent numbers.
But that would be the spacecraft minus the Agena.
If we drag the Agena along with us, this would be a little more work than the spacecraft.
Order.
Order.
What is likely to be the more difficult, the docking or the orbiting of the Agena?
Well, the orbiting of the Agena, we have to depend on, I guess, General Dynamics and Lockheed to accomplish. And then, of course, the ground network to put it there. Once it's there, then the die is cast, the Gemini can go. That's why we at least want one orbit out of it before we lift the Gemini off. So assuming that that mark is made, then the rest of it is really putting the Gemini in the right place. For a flight crew answer, I guess probably the most difficult part is the terminal phase, getting right up to the Agena in position to dock. We unfortunately can't put all of these things in one place to simulate. We can simulate down to about 60 feet with the devices we've been working with, and we can leap on the docking train, which I think most of you all have seen, and go in from there. That phase up doesn't seem to be difficult at all.
At what point do you no longer have navigational aids on the ground? Where are you on your own?
We're on our own from the circularization burn. We then are more accurate than the ground. This is the burn where we go into the 146 circular orbit. So it's really a twofold operation. We're depending on the ground to get to that point, and the ground is depending on us to get from there to dock.
Wally, Gordon Cooper and Pete Conrad, before their mission, were just a little bit concerned about how much time they had to train and getting all the things done before the mission that they felt were appropriate. They later said they got it all done. How do you feel at this point? Have you got time to do all the things you feel you need to do?
I guess the answer to that is you never do have enough time, but we are not as hardly pressed. At the time Gordon was feeling these pains, we too were. And part of our solution to this was an engineering simulator at McDonald. In essence, it has worked as a third Gemini mission simulator in that it's a part test trainer for Underwood. And we had only two Gemini mission simulators contracted, built, and available for us, one at the Cape and one here in Houston. And these were much more complicated to get prepared for Rendezvous training. As a result, with the utilization of this third simulator, we've had a real good leg up on it. In fact, I guess we could say we haven't had much out of the two mission simulators at this point.
I remember Cooper and Conrad were in the Apollo program primarily before they got assigned this flight. And after all, this group here has worked with GT3 for a long time, so we've had quite a bit of simulator training and as far as retro fires, launches, re-entries, this sort of thing is concerned, so we're way ahead of the other crews.
So you feel like your combined work with both of your flight and Gardo's flight?
That's a very big point, yes. The only new thing to us was the Rendezvous, so we had to go scrambling to find the device for that.
With all of this maneuvering and everything, there's been a lot of talk about the food and the work-sleep cycles and this sort of thing. Have you all firmed up any plan on the work-sleep cycle and the eating business?
Yeah, basically what Gordo said, we'll be working together, eating together, and sleeping together.
Two together.
I think the proper choice of words is simultaneously.
Wally, after the braking maneuver, just how hard is it to do the docking? Is it easy to come in too fast?
Well, we have very good control of the system if everything is working well. We have plenty of control authority. We have a varied selection of control modes. The only difficult thing that we can imagine is not seeing the Agena change size, and this would be strange, if we start braking at 3,000 feet, and that is a fairly large object at that range. It's not farther out. So we are dependent on radar until we really see the Agena as far as judging range. If we have radar, it's quite simple.
In doing it, is it like flying formation in an airplane, pulling up into position like tail end Charlie?
Unfortunately, it's not. We initially thought it was, but there are too many degrees of motion to handle, plus orbital mechanics. And you don't just point at it and decelerate and expect to keep sliding right on in. You may, for example, be going a little bit too fast and go over it, where with an airplane you can push a stick forward and you'll still come to the airplane you're trying to join up on. You can throw out the speed brake and decelerate, or turn slightly and ease away. In orbital mechanics, you can go roaring off into a quadrant, as we call it, which is very difficult to re-rendezvous.
Did it take a lot of training then to smooth out the maneuver?
That and using everything we had available, putting all the cues together in one package.
How much fuel are you allowing for maneuvering? Terminate that?
We start out with quite a load of fuel in contrast to the previous flights. It's roughly 700 pounds, I think 690 something. And from this, we will use some of the fuel for the separation burn from the Titan booster when we're in orbit. That's only about 10 feet per second. You might reckon the fuel, by the way, is almost equivalent to 1 pound equivalent to 1 foot per second. So we interchangeably will say feet per second for a maneuver or pounds. And we'd actually read in the cockpit feet per second would be incremental velocity indicators, the IVI that you all may recognize now. The IVI is reading all three navigation axes, fore aft, up, down, left, and right. So we get every burn we make log on this readout. Now, we have budgeted a portion of this fuel. We haven't really pinned down the exact number for correcting the out-of-plane that might develop between the spacecraft and the Agena. Initially, we talked in terms of 240 feet per second, budgeted just for that, which is almost a third of the total load. Now, we've learned more as we've done more trajectory analyses and feel we don't need to give that much away for that contingency. It's not necessary that we would use the 240 feet per second. We found that we can, at least the simulation from the NSR maneuver, affect docking with approximately 240 pounds. So we still have 240 left if you talk about all of the things we've used. So we're not really hard up for fuel. We are probably have quite a cushion. At least we hope we will.
I have two questions. How long is the mission in revolutions? And could we have a list of the experiments that you're carrying on board?
Well, first, I'll do the mission part. I can hold my breath and let Tom do the experiment part. The art of rendezvous is quite complicated in that what we're doing is counting down four separate systems, if you think about it. That's the Aegean, the Atlas, the Gemini, and the Titan. So they all have to fall together. Now, we will launch if we have a good Aegean, but it may take a little bit longer than the nominal four orbits to get into rendezvous position. If it does, for example, if we use up our launch window, if we launch late by 140 seconds, as an example, the whole profile is shifted one orbit. Our launch window can go up to about 25 to 30 minutes. Then we may delay and go up the next orbit. The window is then smaller. We may, for example, not be able to make it that first day and go up a day later or 2 days later, depending on when we cut off the Gemini. So all of these variables should be reckoned with. So we call the capability of the spacecraft 2 days, meaning we have the power supplies, the consumables, electrical power, propulsion, food, and the men capable of lasting 2 days, obviously. Now, if we get everything done that we have scheduled, we may terminate the mission earlier. This is sort of the real-time planning. So it's open-ended up to 2 days is the best way to describe the mission. Now, when we come down, of course, is determined again by the optimum recovery areas. So that itself is a constraint. So that's what you play for. If, for example, we terminated the mission at the end of the first day, it would be 15 revolutions. We would come down in an area called 16-1, which would be in the Atlantic. Now, that would be if everything was done that we intended to do on the mission, and nothing left open, it was 100% complete. This could happen if we got off right on time and got right in position.
That's the experiment.
On the basic experiments that we're carrying on the mission, the first one, we'll go right down the list, is the D-1 experiment for the Department of Defense. This is a measurement of celestial objects through photography. The primary body we're going to try to measure is the moon. Unfortunately, somewhat near our launch date, we're going to be near the new moon phase, so this may be rather difficult. However, I think we'll try to get photographs of several planets using this photography gear that we'll have on board. The second experiment is the D2 experiment, which is the photographic definition of nearby objects in space from various positions, lighting backgrounds, and this is what Wally described as the maneuver that we will do around the Aegean. We will basically do a 360-degree circle in plane around the Aegean to take some pictures. The D3 experiment is a mass determination experiment in space in which we will calibrate the thrusters on the Gemini by applying the known velocity over an increment of time. Calibrate our thrust, we know what the mass of the Gemini is, then we'll from there on continue the mass calculations of the combined bodies. We have the S5 and S6 experiments. These have been conducted both on GT-4, 5, and 6. This is synoptic terrain photography and also the synoptic weather photography. Naturally, we'll have the areas over Mexico if we have time to work those in. This will have to be a real-time decision as to how it works in with the rendezvous. And the basic weather photography will just be targets of opportunity and funnel systems and certain air mass systems that we'll have. Those basic ones are the ones that we carry on board the GTA-6. There's D-8, which is the radiometric experiment. We have fixed dosimeters in the spacecraft, and we'll have one movable and one fixed large dosimeter in the spacecraft, and we'll calibrate certain areas that have more than the nominal background radiation involved. This was conducted on GT-4 also.
Wally, actually, two questions here. How critical is your electrical power supply for this flight?
We have enough to run almost fully powered for one day. So obviously if we have a two-day mission, we'll be in the so-called drifting and dreaming status, basically powering down to conserve electrical power, carrying a typical load of about 12 amps. This is due to the fact that we have a battery mission, of course. We have three batteries, which we talk about as being 400 ampere hour batteries, but they, if they're a good, hot, fresh battery, you might see 450. So there's a delta amperes, if you want to, of 150, which is considerable. Of course, that would be something over 10 hours. So you play that one pretty close. If we, for example, do launch late in the window and have to delay rendezvous, say, until about the 14th or 15th orbit, we will be powered down for a considerable period of time prior to rendezvous.
Okay, second question for Gus and John. In view of the trend of the backup crews moving ahead three flights and becoming prime crews, do you expect to get the prime on GT-9, or are you looking toward a split up like they did on Ed and Jim, where they split the crew, and do you expect to be split up and maybe make a bid for Gemini 12?
Well, I don't know how to answer that. I would certainly expect us to be split up. I think John is due for his own flight.
John, what do you have to say about it?
I hope Gus is right.
Related to that, Wally, I won't reveal your age, but it seems to me that you're creeping up here along with me. Are you still looking fondly at Apollo and trip out to that there place?
Your old friend has helped so much. Do you feel your age? Very good. I think that's really a good answer. In fact, I guess they outrank you now, don't they? No, I think that's a physical plateau that you have to face as time goes on, and I have to face the problem of age, so as long as I can meet the requirements for a mission, I intend to keep my hand in.
Friend.
That's why I have this bald-headed co-pilot to make me look younger.
I'm only 34 short.
One question. Wally, I wonder if you could give us an indication of changes or modifications or improvements or one thing or another that are now being applied to your spacecraft as a result of Gemini 5.
It turned out there were minor things that came out. There were some questions about the radar set later in the mission. This was a minor component. I believe it was a capacitor that caused a glitch in the circuit. This is being reworked. Other than that, there were no major problems from 5 that did affect us. When Gordo called out a real-time message for me about putting a grease mark up in lieu of a reticle, we both knew it was a joke that I couldn't do without it. And his problem with the sunlight blasting him in the face with it is one I had reckoned with and hadn't, I guess, told him about my fix, which is a little rubber shield around the edge of it. Initially, I put it in to protect the mirror from hitting me with light due to a cabin light, so this would solve that problem. His reticle itself failed, I guess you all know, because of a short one wire. Well, that kind of thing you just don't want to happen. We do have a normal power supply.
You're not?
No, we're not. We're flying suited.
You're flying suited.
How did the two of you get together? Did you know each other before you became astronauts?
I guess to answer that, simply no.
Did you have an option of picking up your man, Wally?
Well, I guess what we really say is we have right of first refusal.
You mentioned that you could launch in the second orbit of the Eugenia if you missed the first one. What will the difference be in launch windows?
Well, that's one that you really don't answer intuitively. This is wrung out of a whole bank of computers, and we have documents that are launch documents, launch trajectory documents that lay these out. And I, frankly, would prefer that kind of accurate answer to you. get from some of the gang that work in the trajectory group under FOD on the Chris Grassford. Actually, Bill Tyndall would be a good source for answers like that. There have been some very careful studies made. It's approximately, I guess, another 50 minutes old after we lose our first window.
One thing we plan to do on this mission is to have y'all steering on the second stage of the Titan, and we hope that the Titan will steer us right in the plane as close as we can get to the Gina plane. So it's hard to really say. It depends on the performance of the Titan and how good they can come out. I don't think anybody can answer that right now.
We have to have a little bit of a stroke. You want to go to the room? You want to go to the room?
John, you're